Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Media reports suggest a new proposal is being agreed to end the Ukraine conflict, details of which mirror many of Russia's demands, like Kiev relinquishing territory, reduced army, and recognition of Russian as an official language. Is peace finally on the horizon? Crosstalking possible peace, I'm joined by my guest, Anthony Weber in the UK. He's an independent political commentator. In Serbia, we have Drago Bosnic. He is a geopolitical and military analyst. And in Switzerland, we cross to Andrei Telesenko. He is a former Ukrainian diplomat. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Anthony, like a lightning bolt out of the blue, we have a new proposal. The FT and Axios in the last news cycle reported many of the elements. This is a 28-point peace plan, apparently. The 20-point plan for Gaza isn't working out so well, so maybe that is a preamble. Nonetheless, I have to admit to all of you, I didn't expect this. Anthony, your thoughts?
Well, it doesn't surprise me the way the Donald Trump presidency is working at the moment. But the bottom line is the Americans will be well aware of what the bottom lines are regarding the Russian point of view. So unless all those aspects are covered, this will actually be a waste of time. And of course, there's one other issue, and that is they want to eradicate all traces of Nazism in the Ukraine, which has been one of the major causes of this conflict. So it will be interesting, but obviously Ukraine is going to have to recognise the breakaway parts of Ukraine, including Crimea, and give up intentions of joining NATO, and basically become a little bit more demilitarized, because there's this wrong perception in the West that they hardly had any armed forces or weaponry, and they definitely, you know, desperately needed this support from other countries. Whereas when this conflict started, they had quite a huge army and many tanks and armaments and so on. So it would be interesting to see, but this could be a first stage. It could be that Zelensky is being told that he's going to have to give up because the situation is untenable. We've had the corruption scandal, and more and more European countries are sort of saying we can't give any more money to Ukraine. So, and we know that Ukraine can't survive without being subsidized by other countries. So it's just a question of time before Ukraine is defeated anyway. So if they're sensible, they'd set the...
You use the phrase, it's sensible. Well, there's no sense of this conflict from the get-go, unfortunately. And I'd like to remind our audience, it's been going on since February of 2014. All right, Drago, I mean, it's kind of interesting. We like to try to connect dots, try to figure out what's going on here. This corruption scandal that erupted last week about the kickbacks in the energy and defense sector, I'm not surprised by that. No, my panel isn't surprised by it, and my viewers are not surprised by it. $100 million, that's a nice piece of change. What happened to the rest of it? Is this a pressure point? Is this a pressure point added to what we heard from Anthony? The Europeans are out of money. They're in debt. They may or may not be able to steal Russian assets in the European Union, particularly Belgium. I mean, are we at some kind of inflection point here? Go ahead, Drago.
Absolutely. I think it's just an excuse, because $100 million doesn't even scratch the surface of the extent of the corruption of the Kiev regime, which has been stealing money, not just from the Ukrainian people, but now also from Western taxpayers, especially Americans and Europeans. So of course, this is nothing new, but it gives a perfect excuse to the Europeans and to Trump to say, well, I'm not going to give you any more money because you're stealing it. And of course, they knew that from the get-go, as you said. I think now Europe is trying to find a way to get out of the conflict without looking like a losing side.
yeah, good luck with that. Go ahead, keep going. Yeah.
I mean, as I said in previous programs, this is something that I really don't understand. How many times does Europe need to be defeated by Russia to realize it's not a good idea to go and try to attack Russia? It's been 800 years since the first invasion by the Teutonic Knights, and that was before Russia had 6,000 nuclear weapons. So good luck, as you said, good luck with that, trying to defeat Russia. I mean, the most sensible thing for Ukraine now would be to get rid of the neo-Nazi junta and elect a government that's going to make a deal with Russia to stop the killing, because obviously there are people who want to continue the killing between two pretty much the same people. I mean, not even fraternal, but this is the same people.
Well, Draco, for the people that want to continue the war, sure, some of them may be these ultra-ethnic nationalists, also known as Nazis, but a lot of people want to keep the grift going. I mean, there's a lot of money involved in here. The longer the war lasts, the more that they're going to be able to accumulate and steal. Andre, the wild card, at least the way it's presented to all of us, is the Zelensky clan and the people are around him. Now, the West has ample influence, but he's still their conduit. And as Drago was pointing out, you know, when are they going to admit that this has been a farce from the very beginning? Because they've invested so much into this client named Zelensky. How much, or as Trump would say, what cards are he holding? Go ahead, Andre.
Zelensky has no cards. I don't know what he's holding. It's on air, so I don't want to say exactly what he's holding, but he's holding something very inappropriate, which is not going to help him at this point. And nor his surrounding, nor Yermak at this situation is not also that cannot be an assist to the Zelensky regime. They're all falling apart. It was understood that it's going to all fall apart when the special operation started, with Ukraine pushing this war and basically bring it onto itself, except not accepting a peace deal with the Minsk Accords. Today, it's all over with. It's the beginning of the end of Zelensky. I've been talking about this for more than 7 months, that Zelensky regime, by the end of the year, might fall, that there's a RICO case open in the United States by the FBI. There are informants from Ukraine running to Washington to spill the beans on Zelensky and his surrounding. And today, we're seeing the results. All these so-called investigations are just the beginning. It's not for a fight for corruption. It's a fight for grab for power in Ukraine and the change of power with the Zelensky regime. It's not even 100 million there. I know that for a fact, Mnlich is holding the cryptocurrency for Zelensky in his pocket, more than $2 billion worth of Bitcoin. That's what Mnlich has. The Zuckerman brothers have another part. And there's billions of dollars worth of money stolen from the West, the U.S. taxpayers, especially more than $350 billion invested into this war by the United States. So that's where it's all hidden. And I think Zelensky today is his only way out to stay alive is to leave the country right now and to get it over with, or to agree with the peace deal that it's on the table for him, because there's going to be no way out for him in the future peacefully, or to stay alive where he can actually manage to leave Ukraine in this matter. So I believe that this is the end. And we're going to see some changes happening in the future. Whether the peace deal is going to be signed by the Kyiv regime or not, this is basically the end of the Zelensky regime.
You know, Anthony, it's very interesting. Trump likes to have, you know, the Trump peace plan for Gaza, the Trump peace plan for Ukraine, and that's all theatrics, in my opinion, here. But the it'll be kind of ironic if this moves forward, and I'm very skeptical because of the entire history of this administration dealing with Ukraine, but it would be quite ironic that if it's the Trump plan, but it's really the Russian plan, he's just agreeing to it. I mean, we've already enumerated the elements of this plan. This is what the Russians have wanted from the very beginning. Anthony.
Yes, certainly that could well be the case. It's interesting that Lord Richards, Field Marshal Lord Richards, who was chief of the UK Defence Staff, recently said in The Independent that it wasn't in the UK's interest to be involved in Ukraine, and the best thing the Ukraine could do would be to negotiate a peace agreement. So that was buried a little bit, the same as the news of the corruption has been buried a little bit in the UK. But these things can't be, you can't keep a lid on them forever. And when somebody as significant as somebody who was the last key officer in Afghanistan, well-respected, says that it's not in the UK's interest to be in Ukraine, and you can go by that, that it's not even in Western Europe's interest to be in Ukraine, that it's really is time for Zelensky and his crowd to go. And it's just so sad that it's come to this point where there have been hundreds of thousands of casualties, mainly Ukrainian ones, who've all been fighting for nothing because a lot of their country's been sold off to private equity funds and others. And they've had key people in the government who've been ripping off their own people, as well as was said, the taxpayers in the United States, the UK and other countries. So it does look as though Russia is going to get what they wanted.
Yeah, well, Anthony, what about all the bluster about, you know, getting ready for the next war with Russia and a war against Russia in 2030? I mean, how are these people going to walk this back in Europe?
Well, I really think that a few people should be resigning because they've actually been sending people to their deaths. And that goes for Boris Johnson, who's been an absolute disgrace because he's one of the ones who is responsible for...
I wonder how he made out financially through all of this. Inquiring minds would like to know. I think we all know the answer. Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in. We're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on possible peace. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter LaVelle. To remind you, we're discussing possible peace. Okay, let's go back to Drago in Serbia. So explain something to me. I'm a simple guy. I'm just a talk show host, okay? So we had this summit in Anchorage. The Russians had the impression that the Trump administration... You know, they had a breakthrough. They were actually, the Russians got to make their own case, not the European allies, not NATO, not the mainstream media. It was one-to-one. This is what we want, okay? They got it loud and clear, which I think that was worthwhile. A lot of other people thought it was a waste of time. But they got their message out. So Trump goes back to the United States, and then, like school children, the Europeans end up in the Oval Office, and Trump is being called daddy, and they're putting pressure on him, and then he pivoted, okay? Now he's pivoting again. What happened? Is it because the Europeans just don't have any more oomph anymore? They don't have any more money. They don't have sound security logic. I mean, they're basically bankrupt in every single way. Is that what's in play here? Or has Trump just said it's not worth continuing this? Or is it a mixture of these things? Drago.
I think it's a mixture of all those things. Plus, Trump, we have to keep in mind that Trump is essentially a speculator. He started his career as a real estate speculator, and now he became essentially a stock market speculator because he knows when he says something, you know, he can manipulate the market, he can make money in this way. And this has been a major part of his policy making since he became president, because he's been saying a lot of things that he hadn't really, you know, fulfilled any of those promises. So, of course, that's a problem, because that's not how you lead a superpower such as America, and especially not when you're dealing with other superpowers such as China and Russia. And for the Russians, this couldn't get more serious, because for Russia, this is a matter of its basic national security. For the United States, it's just a matter of making money. And of course, this is why the Russians don't have anyone to talk to in the West, because nobody's as serious as Russia is. For Russia, this conflict cannot be resolved without the removal of the neo-Nazi junta, without the removal of NATO forces from Ukraine, and without the resolution of the question of the relationships between the Russians and the Ukrainians. And this is going to determine the future of Ukraine itself, because if we have a neo-Nazi junta in Ukraine, there is no future. How are the Russians and the Ukrainians going to live next to each other if there's a hostile, well, fascist government that wants to kill them all and suppress their culture and language? And the language of Ukrainians, because we shouldn't forget that the Ukrainians themselves speak Russian as one of their first languages, actually. I mean, if you look at the statistics, 80% of Ukrainians still Google stuff or search for stuff on the internet in Russian. So Russian is part of their culture, whether they want to admit it or not. So in essence, we see that Russia has no one to talk to in the West until the West changes its course of action.
You know, Andrei, you know, again, we haven't, and none of us, at least at this point, this 28-point program has not been released. We've only heard about snippets of it here. And we've talked about various elements because this has been part of the Russian approach since the start of the special military operation. But Andrei, if you look at this from 30,000 feet in the air, this is just a form of forced regime change. What happens after that?
That's a big question. And I think right now, from what Steve Witko was talking about earlier before, after the Gaza agreements, that they might take the idea from the Gaza agreements and implement it onto the Ukrainian peace deal or that is being discussed today. So the change of government, having the parliament of Ukraine as the only legal body that can right now basically implement any government action, have a new speaker of the parliament who's going to be neutral, who's going to be ready to agree upon signing a peace deal with the Russian Federation, having that Speaker of the Parliament organize and coordinate basically elections in the future, clean up house in Ukraine with the coordination of Russia and
well,
the West.
Well, Andrei, let me ask you maybe a more broader question here. I'm sure news of this is widespread now in Ukraine. Your sources, what do they tell you? What is the reaction to this 28-point possible peace process? Is it welcomed? Is it frustration, in disbelief? What are the words you would use to describe it?
I spoke to different people actually yesterday and the days before about whatever is happening right now on the situation. Military are ready. They agree. They're ready to accept this peace plan. The people who are fighting on the front lines, they want peace. They say, we don't care which flag flies over Ukraine. We want our lives back, one thing. Civilians in government offices and different other people just in Kiev are saying the same thing. We are ready to accept, if it's peace, we want our government to accept this peace plan. So this is what people are talking about on the ground. Separately, the people in the parliament are now organizing to denounce today's regime, to denounce Yermak, denounce Stefan Shiv, the Speaker of the Parliament. That's what I started with. And basically bring in somebody neutral. There's talks about having Tymoshenko or Razumkov to become the Speaker of the Parliament, and then who can lead into new elections and basically quiet regime change with the coordination of Moscow and Washington directly in this situation, and bring new elections with the possibility of having people who are wanting peace with Russia, not just the people in Poroshenko, Klitschko, having elections with those crowd. It's not even bringing changes in Ukraine or resolutioning. You need people with a broad spectrum political sphere that are ready to negotiate with Russia, like Azarov, Medvedchuk, and others who have no possibility to be part of those elections today, but maybe part in the future with the neutral government in place in Kiev. So that's what the realities are on the ground. People are ready for the peace plan, people are ready for changes, and people are ready to be friends with Russia back again, because they understand this is done for Ukraine.
Yeah, Anthony, how does Europe, I mean, the Europeans have been saying, particularly in the last few months, it's almost to the point of war fervor, that Russia can't be allowed to win. Do they have the headspace to be able to say, having peace is more important than who won and who lost? Because that's a mature political approach. Peace is better than anything else. Are they there? Can they be there? Or maybe they all should just be fired?
Well, the thing is, one of the problems is the attitude of certain key leaders in Western Europe, including the United Kingdom. But it's like a dam which is about to burst. The public of these countries have suffered tremendously because of the sanctions against Russia. There have been huge rises in the cost of living, cost of energy, all attributable to the sanctions against Russia. And the economies, particularly of countries like Germany, have suffered because of the attitude of their government towards Russia. So I think it's just a question of time before people accept the situation is untenable and that the situation has to change. You only have to look at the United Kingdom. It's about $5 billion a year, which is given to Ukraine. In the United States, it's been about $70 billion so far that they've spent since 2022. And it's just totally, what do you get in return for this? You get nothing, absolutely nothing, except destruction. And for the globalists who have got their eyes on the resources of Ukraine, they've lost a lot because Russia has taken over many of the areas which have got the key resources. So nobody's gaining, but the absolutely terrible decisions which have been made, really, the politicians who've made them should be falling on their swords.
It's interesting, is that Andrei told us that the Ukrainian people are expressing their view about this failed leadership under Zelensky in a senseless war, a proxy war against Russia. So, Drago, when are the Europeans going to start pointing fingers at their leaders and particularly at NATO? This was a NATO project, and it is a busted flush. But who will be ever made accountable for this catastrophe?
Well, that's the trillion-dollar question. I don't think anybody will want to take responsibility, especially not NATO. And we know that the European Union has essentially become a geopolitical pendant of NATO, unfortunately. It is demonstrated that it's not a geopolitical or it's not an economic bloc. It's just a pretty much a military extension or an economic extension of a military alliance that we know as NATO. Unfortunately, I don't think anyone is going to want losing sight. They will want to present this, even if there's a peace deal, they will want to present this as Russia's loss because it didn't take over the entirety of Ukraine.
No. Drago, I'll tell you, they'll go further than that. They'll say, we won because they didn't make it to the English Channel. We won. Go ahead, Drago.
Exactly. I think that's exactly how they're going to try to present it, because the NATO is desperate for a win. We shouldn't forget that just 4 years ago, NATO lost a war in Afghanistan to people wielding rusty AKs, and they were expecting to win against a superpower, military superpower such as Russia. So they need a win. They need to present this as a win of some kind. For Russia, the only thing that really matters is to prevent Ukraine's entry into NATO and the deployment of NATO troops in Ukraine. And of course, we can talk about demilitarization and denazification, which are very important goals, but the strategic goal, number one, is the removal of NATO forces from Ukraine. That's the end all be all for Russia. And anyone who thinks otherwise, of course, doesn't understand the Russians, Russia's strategic thinking, because Russia needs to be safe. Russia needs to know there won't be any, you know, cruise missiles.
And Drago, it needs to be pointed out for Ukraine to be safe, for Europe to be safe, Russia must be safe. If you have the indivisibility of security, everybody is safe. And that is a political logic that NATO is dismissed and many American administrations. Why not safety for all? That's the solution for all countries in Europe. Maybe that'll enter their mind as this 28-point program moves forward, and I hope it does. We're all tired of talking about this. All right, gentlemen, that's all the time we have. I want to thank my guests in Switzerland, Serbia, and in the UK. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.